David Abramson, a very good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Howard. Those are nutty.
So, David, a lot of us are feeling yes. angry right now. We're feeling fatigued. Right. I've got messages from Leslie, who is listening to us in Cape Town. She normally lives in Johannesburg. She's been stuck there for 9 weeks. She's frustrated. So many of us are just saying, ugh, we just... Can't anymore. And we know that there are rational, real reasons that we need to self-isolate or we need to make sure that we aren't infecting everybody. But, David, are you there? It's a very, very real concern. What I'm going to do. Oh, I think David is back. David, are you with us? Right, there you go, you're back.
Yeah, sorry.
So it's obviously a very real concern that we know rationally that a lot of this is required, but hell, it's getting hard.
It's getting very, very hard. And, you know, I've certainly seen a deterioration in people's, psychological and emotional, you know, situation over the last, I would say, 10 days, 2 weeks.
I plummeted.
No, I think people, you know, it's interesting, you know, human beings don't do well when they are locked up. And I know that sounds, you know, really obvious, but it's actually a lockup, which is real and perceived. And I think for me, you know, we also keep in mind that we are, you know, we do things and we're motivated by reward as humans. And, you know, we might, I think in the beginning, this, you know, this whole idea and this fear around, you know, the coronavirus and not getting sick was enough of a reward. And it sounds bizarre saying it aloud, but I think people are starting to feel that there's not enough of a reward to stay at home. From a psychological perspective and emotional perspective, people are really starting to struggle. And on top of that, you know, if you are not able to, provide for your family, you're feeling the pressure economically, you know, then the reward of staying at home and not getting sick actually in people's minds starts to get outweighed by venturing out, obviously taking certain precautions, and starting to kind of be rewarded by going out and alleviating these pressures and these, you know, difficulties that they feel. And, you know, we know that human beings are interesting things, and with that, you know, like we've often spoken on the show about cognitive dissonance, you know, where people can rationalize away things which are clearly, you know, not good for them, like smoking or excessive drinking. People aren't silly. They know that smoking is going to harm them, but yet they still do it and are able to find a way to justify it.
It's so interesting. A short while ago, a friend of mine had a birthday, and there was like a drive-by to just wave and wish him happy birthday. And what I saw was so many people stopped their cars to get out, and there was very little he could do about it, in truth. What was interesting is that what it said to me was how desperately we need social interaction and how desperately we miss each other.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There is this need to, you know, and I'm hearing more and more, about, parents who are saying, you know what, we can't do this anymore. And they are having, you know, friends over to play in the garden, you know, having friends come over and interacting, which is clearly, you know, not what's being advised at the moment.
Yeah, but this is the law, just to be clear on that.
Just to be clear, so I won't mention names, but this is what's happening.
If we guess, can you say yes or no?
Oh, wow.
I'll knock twice.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But to some extent, it's greatly understandable. You know, this today, and I haven't mentioned this on air before, is I have Yahrzeit for my late mom. So it's 3 years today that she passed away. And the fact that I cannot go to a shul, or I can't have a minyan to say Kaddish for her, which is a Jewish ritual that you say on the day of the anniversary of the death of one of your close relatives, is extremely painful and extremely difficult. So we've got people that, you know, friends around the world that where they can do that, they say Kaddish on our behalf. But it would have been so easy for us just to get together in a garden and to have 10 of us, which is, you know, part of our family. It's easy, and we could have done this, but we can't just because it is simply against the regulations. And if it doesn't apply to me, then why should anybody else apply it? And science says, I know a lot of families that are getting together over Shabbat at the moment. It's very problematic.
It is,
but understandable at the same time.
And it's interesting because when I thought about it, there seems to be a number, but of psychological processes driving this kind of, if you want to call it a backlash. And one of them is motivated perception, and that's the tendency for people to see really what they want to see. You know, so no matter what the reality is, you kind of find things that affirm your reality. And the other one is confirmation bias. And that's like our tendency as human beings to pay more attention to views that support our beliefs. And then we play down the beliefs that kind of don't fit in. And we see that around the world, especially in America, where, you know, we have a president who is driving a certain narrative for political reasons. And if people are feeling, I think to a degree in South Africa with the DA, and certainly I'm not judging the merits, but as soon as another party or another strong voice starts to speak about, like in America and in South Africa to a degree, the lockdown is causing more harm economically then then from a health perspective, then these factors started to then the motivated perception and the confirmation bias starts to kick in. And if we're starting to feel distressed, and the majority of us are from an emotional perspective, we're going to hook onto these voices because we're just so desperate to have our bias confirmed. And in a way we persuade ourselves that actually, you know, this is the right way to go because it feels uncomfortable. We need to get out. We need to move. I think there is a reality to it with all the, you know, with all the difficulties as far as, the economics are concerned. But certainly as far as the medical side is concerned, it certainly doesn't point in that direction. So there's this absolute kind of a conflict in people's minds, but this backlash, I think, definitely is a sign that we really are struggling, and we're looking for information and news that tells us and gives us permission that we can actually go out.
So interesting.
He's nailed it.
Because like before, the lockdown, there was that camp, that school of thought that was saying it's just a flu, and they disappeared. Until now, obviously, people started speaking out that, let's open up the economy. 80% of people will get it anyway. And now you're seeing more and more people
saying,
well, 99% of people will recover anyway.
Yeah.
You know, throwing stats at us without, the empathy that life matters.
Okay, so it's actually very interesting because we've just got very, very, somebody's wagged their finger at us. For a change, because that doesn't happen often, I must tell you. But every now and then somebody does, and this one is from Kim Fine. She says, Howard, what really pains me is when presenters, including yourself, merely say X number of people have died, like they are talking about the weather. Do we really stop and think of the pain and the loss of the millions and their families of people who have lost loved ones?
That's what I've seen as well.
Oh, so you too?
No, man, I'm not saying it's you.
I'm
not saying
everybody wants to be Kim.
No, because I mean that's also me. Because I mean, in my news, I'm quoting all these numbers and it's nothing. It's just like slipping off my tongue.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is that I'm seeing a lot of it on Twitter that people are just throwing stats that let's open up the economy. 99% of people will recover anyway. It's just the flu. You just only to die. You only have to have these, pre-existing as if a single life doesn't really matter. Imagine when a person dies.
How many people are affected? Don't worry about it.
Exactly. Not understanding, the tragedy that, comes to a lot of people.
I'll tell you another problem. And David, I'd like your thoughts on this.
Sure.
I was quite annoyed about this, and I haven't raised it yet, but I'm going to right now because I think it's important. On my walk on a Saturday morning somebody that I bumped into asked somebody else that was this or there, whatever, how is so-and-so doing? And you know, I said, wow, what's wrong with so-and-so? And they said, oh, no, he's got COVID. He's really had a very hard time. And anyway, it was the end of the conversation. And a little bit later when I was thinking about it, I thought, hold on a minute. We are definitely seeing cases within our community, and some people are actually quite ill from it. And yet there does seem to be a almost unspoken conspiracy of silence around people who have COVID-19, as though there's a stigma or as though there's some form of shame around it. And what worries me about that is that if we don't talk about these things, it doesn't become real. Mm. So if we don't talk about this one bloke who happened to be from Hatsola who has it or had it, and we pretend that it doesn't exist, that to me is a major problem. And when I raised it with somebody else, they said, oh, no, we can't talk about it because then people will say, well, what about this? And I'm not going to do that. And I said, but those are conversations that we need to have. We are adults. We are mature people who need to understand that these things are real and they are within our community, and pretending that they don't exist will not make it not exist. In fact, it will do the very opposite, because we are going to see more incidents if we don't talk about it. And to me, it really bothers me that there's an unspoken veil of silence around people who have it. And I'm not saying we should name and shame, but we need to talk about it, because there is no shame, number one. And number two, we obviously have to respect people's privacy, but if somebody, you know, we do need to talk about the fact that people are getting it.
No, absolutely. I think for me, that's the point that we're at. And I think maybe we would have been a little bit more comfortable saying, you know, this one has contracted it and this one has, being exposed to COVID. But now I think for me, as I say, I think this absolute conflict that we're feeling within ourselves, you know, and another kind of concept optimism bias. So like, it won't happen to me. And that can become stronger and stronger when we start to feel, as we say, uncomfortable with what we need to do in order to avoid getting the disease. And so we start to say, listen, you know, this bias towards optimism is, it won't happen to me. And we have to confirm that reality. So how do we confirm that reality? Really is, we need to kind of, as Kim maybe says, we hear the numbers, but we don't really think about each individual person. Mm-hmm. We don't actually acknowledge that people around us are actually experiencing and contracting the illness. So it's,
so we
in
just
a way,
pretend,
you know,
it away.
Well, in a way, yes, but I think for me, in a way, it's what makes us human. We try to naturally avoid what feels uncomfortable for us, even if it means causing us great harm. So it's a complete contradiction. But it's a way that we use what we call defense. It's defense in order to try and overcome uncomfortable realities, even if there are realities that COVID is here, people are dying. But we don't want to be restricted like this. We want to go back to what we had. And it's amazing how we construct our realities. And that's one way of doing it, is like, you know, we don't really need to talk about people who are experiencing it, because if we don't, then, you know, it's not really serious, or maybe it doesn't even exist.
Interesting. Ian says, we are starting to enter the gaslighting phase. He's absolutely right. Gaslighting is defined as distorting the truth in order to confuse or instill doubt in another person to the point that they question their own sanity and reality. I think that is absolutely right.
Absolutely, absolutely. We do start to, and, you know, I think again, we are starting to, you know, with all the conspiracy theories and, you know, is this politically motivated, this lockdown? You know,
hearing that, and then I'm hearing that masks are a way of controlling society. Like, no, and I'm getting these messages from intelligent people.
Yeah.
But obviously with an agenda.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I say, when we have the most, arguably the most powerful man in the world getting up most days at the White House or tweeting away all these theories, it fuels people's, these concepts, these exact concepts of confirmation bias and motivated perception. They go, I want that to make sense from a, I need it to make sense because if it makes sense, if that's true, life would be so much better. We could go back to the way things were. So absolutely, I think it makes a huge, huge difference that we have leaders who are taking medicines which clearly are not, recommended. And I read also that, the CDC in America is being blocked out by the White House. You know, they're not kind of allowed to put out information as freely as they used to. So again, when there are people with such power, and whose voices are heard, worldwide, that really can be a game changer as far as how people want to believe reality.
It is 8:32, about to go 8:33. We're chatting to David Abramson. He's a psychologist in a private practice, and we're talking about the fatigue that everybody is experiencing or seems to be experiencing around lockdown. David, what is your advice to us? So we know on a rational level, this is needed. We also know that there's an element of irrationality about some of the regulations, which make it that much more difficult. We also have financial stress. We've got the issue of our kids being home all day long, and all of this just comes together to paint a picture that that is potentially quite disruptive or quite dangerous. How do we navigate through this?
It's such a good question, and I think it is a difficult one because I think we're getting such, as we've been saying, conflicting messages from so many different areas. But I do think for me it's really about a balance, and it's a balance between understanding that there is a reward for taking precautions. There's definitely a reward for taking precautions, and it's not just driven by unnecessary anxiety. That, and I always say anxiety has got a very bad rap because anxiety can really help us out in life if it stays at a certain level. So I would say it's okay to be anxious. In fact, it's useful to be anxious because it keeps us alert. But, again, as we said many times, we can't, as human beings, stay on this very high level of alert because that leads to that other fatigue that we talk about, that feeling of tiredness and grogginess. So I think there's a balance between going out and as the regulations are lifted and being reasonable about things, taking the precautions that you need to take, feeding the anxiety that is positive anxiety. I don't know how that sounds like a contradiction, but as I say, we need to feel that anxiety to a degree and go out and then use our logic. Go out and do what we can do, knowing that things won't go back to normal, and maybe won't get back to normal for a very, very long time, but that we need to embrace that because, in the end, we are looking at a serious outbreak which is killing people. But at the same time, we do from a psychological and a financial, position need to start going out and living our lives, which is going to, I think really help us in a way to find that balance. If there's too many restrictions, and it's interesting that I've seen that, people are saying that, will threat of fines and will threat of being arrested and really help. And I think, no, to a degree, I think it will help to a degree, but then people start to get resentful about being told that they're just going to be punished, rather than they doing this for a sense of a nation building, something that we're doing all together. So
and,
I do think
and for each other.
And for each other. So I think for me, moving forward, I think it's about being understanding that yes, we need to mourn the loss. And there's been a lot of talk about that loss, the loss of what we had. and to try and come to terms with that, which is very difficult, but at the same time, starting to take back some things which are, which we can do if we take the appropriate precautions.
I think that is very sound advice. Anati, you comfortable?
This feels like trying to lead a healthy lifestyle when you've been eating salads the whole week and then comes your cheat day and you have all these carbs looking at you, but now you can't have all the carbs because you're going to undo all the work that you did.
It's a great analogy.
Honestly, where you just have to, yeah. Oh goodness. It's, yeah, it's a lot, but that's the thing though. I think at the core of it is understanding that things are not going to go back to normal anytime soon. So we need to adjust ourselves and our mindset to, you know, the new normal basically.